Our church is a canvas. Each action, each decision, a brushstroke upon it. What picture are we painting? Who are we becoming?
Well, that picture is coming together. That canvas is going to present a picture of who we're meant to be. That's what this series is about. In a time when it's hard to count on anything for certain, we're thinking about what we can count on as a church. So far in this series, we've talked about how in St. Luke's this year, we can count on growing in our faith, helping people to connect to God through worship, seeking justice, and today, making a difference. Now, I don't want you to get worried about me, but during this pandemic, I've developed an interest in reading obituaries. I know it probably sounds depressing or morbid, but it actually started out of a practical concern. As deaths began to mount from the coronavirus, I wanted to make sure I was staying aware of deaths related to people in our church. So I started scanning the obituaries every morning, and I've come to make some observations about them. For instance, some obituaries can be quite lengthy, listing the many things a person did in life. And then there are some that are amazingly brief, and you can't help but wonder why. Sometimes a church or community of faith is mentioned in a person's obituary, but not much more. In fact, I notice how little is said of people's faith lives in obituaries. Just an observation. Some obituaries, you can tell, were written with a lot of sadness. So-and-so was suddenly taken from us. Others can be kind of humorous. I read one not long ago that began this way: "Old Billy kicked the bucket last Wednesday." I am not making this up. Sometimes certain obituaries catch me by surprise. For instance, last Sunday, I read about Wayne Radford, who died in Carmel. He was on the undefeated 1976 Indiana basketball team, the last team to have a perfect season in college basketball. I had just missed this in other news, and I read that and went, wow, what a loss. But there's something I've noticed about all obituaries they all have in common. They try to capture the difference a person's life made. That with whatever number of years they got to have, whether many or few, you can tell that someone who has written that obituary has labored hard over choosing, in a limited number of words, this person's life made a difference. Why? Because it's a human need to know that our lives matter. That we made a difference with this one and only life that we had. This is the way God made us. We see this early in the book of Genesis, in the story of the Tower of Babel. Why did the people want to build a tower that reached up into the heavens? So that we may make a name for ourselves. Otherwise, we'll be scattered over the face of the whole earth. They need to feel significant. They want to know their lives matter. But this also shows what can happen when that desire gets turned inward. Our desire to make a difference becomes a need to be noticed. James Dobson tells about getting a call from a custodian at the college he attended. Dobson had been an outstanding tennis player when he was a student at the college, and he won a number of trophies for the school. But years later, the trophy case was cleaned out to make room for new ones. The custodian found Dobson's trophies in the dumpster and remembered him from his college days, so he called him and wondered if he would want them. Dobson said of that experience that he realized this: eventually, all our trophies get trashed. If our significance is based on things that bring us glory, it's just a matter of time before they get trashed. So what gives us significance in this life? I want to invite you to do something this morning, something that can have great impact on the way you live the rest of your life. I want you to write your own obituary. Someday, someone's going to write one, so you might as well write it. What do you say? Do you list all your proudest accomplishments or positions you held? Is that what will have made your life significant? Or is significance based on something more? To help you with this assignment, before you start writing, let me offer an example of some people I would say are a good example of what it means to make a difference with our lives. In fact, they demonstrate perfectly the point I'm making because we don't even know their names. The only identification given to us about these people is they are called servants. They are servants in a home in Cana where a wedding is taking place. Jesus' mother is a guest there along with Jesus and his disciples. Weddings in that time lasted for several days. Now, my wife Susan and I are getting ready for a wedding this summer, and just a one-day event seems big enough. I can't imagine trying to plan a wedding for a whole week. Well, at this wedding feast, the wine ran out, a major social faux pas. Jesus' mother must have been a friend of the host because she ran to her son Jesus and said, "Do something." I mean, if you're the mother of the Son of God, you should be able to call in a few favors every now and then, right? Well, Jesus doesn't give her a very promising reply, but even so, Mary turns to the servants of the household standing there, and she says to them, "Do whatever he tells you." So Jesus told them to fill large water jars, big enough to hold 20 to 30 gallons each. Fill them with water, draw some out, take it to the steward of the feast. They did. And somewhere in the process, the water became wine. When the steward tasted it, he couldn't believe it. The wine he was tasting now was better than what he started with. The servants knew they had participated in a miracle. And the story ends saying that the disciples put their faith in Jesus for the first time that day. Now, would you call that significant? The disciples who would carry on Jesus' ministry put their faith in him for the first time because of a miracle that happened through a group of nameless servants. There are no monuments built in honor of these servants. Their names aren't etched anywhere. No churches have been built in their memory. Yet, the faith that built the church can be traced back to these servants. Why? Because they responded to a simple statement. Do whatever he tells you. I believe that statement is the key to finding significance in life, that making a difference in life comes down to doing whatever God tells us. I want us to consider what it means to live with such an attitude and think for a few minutes about what it must have meant for the servants in this story. For instance, begin with this thought. Do whatever he tells you, even if what I'm asked to do makes no sense. Even if what I'm asked to do makes no sense. The servants would have known what the problem was. The steward had probably already asked them to bring more wine from the cellar. They were running out. They already had to report back. The cellar's empty. They could see the panic and hear the whispers. What are we going to do? And now Jesus' mother points to her son and tells them, do whatever he tells you. And what does Jesus say? Fill the large stone jars with water. Now let me ask you something. If you had been one of those servants, what would you have done? Would you have protested? Would you have said, listen, I think it's really admirable that your mother thinks you're special. But hey, dude, the problem is not a lack of water. What good is that going to do? Besides, these jars held about 20 to 30 gallons each. And do you remember how many jars the Gospel of John tells us were there? Six. So how much water is that, math class? 120 to 180 gallons of water. And remember, there was no running water in the house. They didn't have a faucet they could just turn on. They had to go to the water source, probably a well somewhere. So this was no light chore that they were being asked to do. Yet, without ever saying a word, they do it. Let me ask you, does your need to understand a request ever prevent you from taking the first step of obedience? Now, before I go on, I can imagine someone listening right now is thinking, but wait, they were servants. They had to do as they were told. They didn't have the luxury of an opinion. To that, I would say, yep, that's right. So why do you think the New Testament uses as the most popular analogy for being a follower of Christ the designation of servant? Could it be so that when Jesus tells us to do something, we don't rationalize, we don't question, we don't argue whether or not it makes sense, we just do it? Maybe there's been a huge rift in your family, and you feel God nudging you to make an apology to someone, to reach out to them. But your impulse is to deny the feeling by saying, well, what good is that going to do? But God doesn't say, I need you to understand. God just says, I need you to obey. And trust what I can do with obedience. Maybe you get troubled by a huge problem in the world like illiteracy or poverty or hunger, and you feel God nudging you to volunteer in some simple way, but you think, well, what good is that really going to do with such a big, massive problem? Does your need to make sense ever get in the way of obedience? 20 years ago, Norm Stewart in our church started feeling a nudge from God to do something for hungry people. But who was he to do something? The nudge made no sense. Yet for 1 year, he kept feeling this nudge, and he knew it was coming from God. And God was saying, do it, and I'll provide. So after a year, he took the step. He shared the idea with some other people. And a regular breakfast service for homeless people at Fletcher Place began. It's still going. They've served over 300,000 meals, and God is still providing. God is holding up God's end of the bargain. Norm told me Friday when I asked permission to use this story. He said that recently they've lost some donors. And then out of nowhere, he met someone and got to know this person and learned this person had just sold his business. And he asked about what Norm did at Fletcher Place. And Norm told him, and the man said, I want to support that, and wrote a check for $10,000. Martin Luther King Jr. once said, faith is taking the first step without being able to see the whole staircase. Do whatever he tells you, even if it makes no sense. Consider another part of this statement. That significance also means doing whatever he tells you, even if it could be risky. Go back to the servants. They were told to fill the jars with water, draw some out, take it to the steward of the feast. Now, what are they drawing out? Not a trick question. They're drawing out water. As far as they knew, the steward is going to drink water. What would he think when he does? And what could happen to the stewards, to the servants? They could get fired or mistreated or screamed at in front of everybody. Even if they believed that some miracle could happen along the way, they're still taking a very big chance if it doesn't. Have you ever found it hard to obey God because what you're being asked to do is risky? That what you feel God calling you to do could bring embarrassment or even humiliation? You know, we often think about the pain and the suffering that Jesus endured on the cross, but we don't often emphasize the humiliation of the cross. Jesus was stripped nude in front of the world with a crown of thorns crammed on his head to make fun of him. This was the Romans' way of humiliating a person who tried to overthrow them. It was a way of saying, "See how you were wrong? You are shamed. You are despised. People are embarrassed for you. How could you have ever thought that this is right if this is where you end up?" We sometimes forget that the way of the cross involves being willing to be humiliated. I had a lay leader in a church one time that whenever a group of us would meet and talk about bold ideas that we could do as a church, and someone would say, "If we try that, people are going to think we're crazy," he would respond and say, "I'm a follower of Christ. I don't have the luxury of a reputation." Do whatever he tells you, even if it's risky. And here's another. Do whatever he tells you, even if you're not sure you believe. It's probably safe to assume that these servants did not know much about Jesus and most likely met him for the first time in that moment. If so, their obedience couldn't have meant that they were expecting a miracle. And the point here is simple. A miracle occurred not because of faith, but because of obedience in a simple thing. As many times as I've taught and preached this story, I can't believe there's a detail to it that I've missed. But working on this passage this week, something stood out to me I've never noticed before. Let me get to it. Right after Jesus' mother told the servants, "Do whatever he tells you," it says, now standing there were 6 stone jars for the Jewish rites of purification, each holding 20 or 30 gallons. Water for ritual cleansing would have been a common sight in a Jewish home of that time. It was required to wash your hands when you entered a home. Sometimes a person's feet would be washed by a servant. So in such a large gathering of people, it would be expected to see large containers of water for this purpose. Now, a quick little aside. This may not be a big deal, but it's interesting that John points out that there were 6 jars. In biblical numerology, 6 represented imperfection. 7 symbolized perfection. That's where the expression comes from, being between 6s and 7s. We're between the ideal and the imperfect. Could John be suggesting with just a number that things were not quite right in this home? Well, here's the part I noticed for the first time. Jesus said to the servants, "Fill the jars with water." Now, if they had to be filled with water, what do we know about them? Again, not a trick question. They were empty. Maybe I'm making more of this than was intended by John, but could John be suggesting that for the owner of this house, faith that had been a part of this person's life had become empty? Think about it for a moment. In the home of an observant Jewish family, ritual cleansing commanded by the Torah would have been frequent. If you host a large gathering like a wedding, then surely these jars would be kept full and fresh, but they're off to the side, empty. Maybe I'm making more of it than is really there, but it points to something any of us can experience, doesn't it? That our faith can grow empty. We can have symbols of our faith. We can have the proverbial Bible on the coffee table. It reminds us when we had regular worship in our lives and study and fellowship, how that was a part of who we are, but somewhere along the way it got cold. Now the only time the Bible is lifted is when we're dusting. We have things that remind us of our faith, but now they sit empty. God seems distant. We don't feel as connected to God as we once did. If you think about it, what did it really matter in the great scheme of Jesus' ministry that he turned some water into wine? So what? He kept a party going for a few more hours. There were probably some who should have been cut off a long time ago. Just giving a party some extended life, that couldn't have been an important matter to Jesus. But giving new life to people's faith, now that's another story. Using not just random containers to perform a miracle, but the ones that represented an empty faith. Now that shows Jesus' desire to come into our emptiness and bring new life and connection to God, and he will. But we have a role to play. It happens when we respond, when we take a step, and we act, and we do what he tells us to do. Do you feel that your life is making a difference today? Do you feel God coursing through your veins and what you do? Or have you been a little empty lately? Have you felt you aren't being used? Maybe you're not even sure why you're here. If you have the ability to draw breath, then be assured of this: God can use you. And the miracle comes. The experience of God happens when we obey in some simple act of service. God meets us when we offer ourselves to others. Let me close with a story about a woman in a past church I served. She came to see me one day with an idea. She began by saying, "Let me first tell you a story. I've struggled with depression off and on throughout my life. Years ago, we were in another church and I hit a low point. I couldn't even get out of bed. It was my birthday and my daughter brought me the mail. In it was a card from my pastor. She said I couldn't believe it. He remembered it was my birthday. And something happened to me. I got out of bed because I felt significant. The pastor remembered my birthday." Then she said, "So I thought, if it meant that much to me, how much might it mean to people in our church today? How much would it help them?" I started to feel a little headache beginning to come on. She said, "I want you to send a card to everyone in our church on their birthday." I tried not to let my facial response give me away, but it was too late. She said, "Don't worry. I'll get the list from our database. I will personally buy all the cards and hand address each one and every week. Bring a stack to your office. All you have to do is sign them." I said, "That's it?" She said, "That's it." I said, "You're on." So she did. And I couldn't believe the reaction I got. People were floored. And every card or email I received from members of the church telling me what it meant to them to get a birthday card from me, I forwarded to this woman because she was the one responsible. Well, a few years after that, her depression hit again in a tough way. I went to see her. She started talking about the birthday cards. I said, "Look, forget about the birthday cards. You need to take care of you right now." She said, "Don't you dare. Those cards are the one thing that gets me out of bed in the morning. It's the one thing that makes me feel like God is using me and I have a reason to be here." So I said to her, In that case, would you please hurry up because we're getting behind? Every person has a need to know their life matters and they can make a difference. And part of the purpose of the church is to help people find a way to let God use them. If you'd like to get more involved in service through St. Luke's, I want to encourage you to visit our serving portal. Go to our website, stlukesumc.com, and then /serve. At the top, you'll see featured opportunities, including an upcoming outreach open house on January 31st, where you can talk with our team in ways you can get involved in our Minority Business Incubator. Nicole and Kristen on our church staff will update this page today, and these opportunities at the top will be ready to go. Categories will include outreach, open house, the incubator I mentioned, kids and student ministries. They need group leaders. They need volunteers. There are ways to serve from home, phone calls, cards. Our worship ministry needs people willing to help us in our audiovisual area. These are just a few of the ways. But it begins with our listening. And when we feel those nudges from God responding, even when we don't believe, even when it makes no sense, even when we think, how is that going to make a difference? Or I'm being nudged to do something that feels risky, and what if I fail? It means do it anyway and discover how God meets us. So let me let you get back to your obituary. What might get added because you did in your life whatever he told you?